Welcome to a new episode of the podcast Feel Good and Have Fun with your host, Benny Ottison. Benny talks about diet, exercise, sleep, brain workout, biohacking, and maybe a glass of wine. After the podcast, visit Benny's blog at bennyottison.com. Here we go. Have fun.
My guest today is a dream guest, actually, for me. He's an author. He's an international public speaker. He's a high-performance coach, an influencer, and a real biohacker. Welcome, Siim Land.
Hey, thanks for having me, and good to be here.
Yeah, and you're from Estonia, right?
Yes, I am. From Saaremaa.
Okay. And how are you in these crazy days?
Well, my own life hasn't changed that much. Okay. Like, I still live in the countryside, and I don't really go into like big cities that frequently anyway.
Okay.
Besides, unless I'm like traveling, so like a few of these speaking events have been cancelled or rescheduled, but other than that, everything is just normal.
Okay, that's fine. We have chosen to focus on one topic today. I could speak about much things because you have so much knowledge about so much things. But we focus today on anti-aging, and of course, that's not for personal reasons. Maybe a little. So I think we jump right in. What your thoughts about anti-aging and food, including fasting and supplements?
Yeah, that's a good question. And for me, just wanting to live longer or promoting my own longevity isn't necessarily. It's not because that I want to live forever or something like that. It's more just because it's kind of exciting and it's kind of the cutting edge of science, as well as it's going to essentially help me to stay more productive for longer, so to say, because like the majority of the population, they tend to age quite rapidly, and they start to age even in their like 40s and 50s. Like, they're pretty much finished. Like, they're almost finished when they are in their 60s. That's not really like the way I would like to live, and it's definitely not going to help our own society to stay more productive in a way. So the other option would be to kind of take care of your health, and as well as to know how can you slow down the aging process, as well as maintain your longevity for longer, so that you could even be like a highly functioning human being even in your like 80s and 90s and even 100s or whatnot. So currently, like, I don't think we have kind of made any breakthroughs necessarily in terms of exponentially increasing the possible human lifespan, but we are making some improvements in increasing the health span. So there's a difference between lifespan and health span. Lifespan is the, you know, the chronological length of your life, whereas the health span is the aspect of how long are you able to stay healthy, and how long are you able to still, you know, do some gardening and move around and maintain your independence, so to say, so you're not like hospitalized in a bed and you're able to stay functional for longer periods of time. And when it comes to like
and also lesser costs for the society.
Exactly. Yeah, like there is a huge economic burden on taking care of people, so that they, like, even like a lot of the chronic diseases in society, they're very, very much preventable. They're lifestyle diseases, and people just tend to follow their own dietary habits as well as other lifestyle habits, and that makes their health much worse than it should be, and therefore they're also, you know, forced to take many medications. They're they're putting themselves under a much, much higher burden, and that also rubs off on like the economy and whatnot. So I wouldn't want to, you know, become dependent of like any medications or other forms of, you know, healthcare. So I'd much rather stay healthy. I would much rather do as much as I can to prevent that and slow down this process. And yeah, like when it comes to nutrition, then you know, obviously nutrition is one of the most important things for your health, and it does affect the aging process as well. And you know, a lot, you know, aging itself leads to like a dysfunctional metabolism, that you become more diabetic, you have some insulin resistance, you have hypertension, and all those things, they're, you know, directly connected to the nutrition as well. As well as like certain foods kind of turn on or turn off, you know, the body's genes and different pathways that regulate the aging process. So if you are constantly like eating, you know, in a particular way that stimulates aging and stimulates the development of different diseases, then yeah, it's going to accelerate your aging as well. Whereas on the other hand, if you follow a proper diet that actually takes into account these factors, then you can, yeah, just control kind of the direction that your body is heading towards. Yeah. And yeah, like different kinds of you know, one of the main premise or the most important thing is to just not overeat or not eat too many calories, because as the body is overnourished, then it's also going to develop these metabolic diseases, like the diseases of affluence or overabundance. Like in the modern world, we are exposed to too many calories and too many these different ingredients that make the body accumulate too much energy. Like there's this excess energy in the system, and therefore it's kind of leads to like an imbalances. And actually, on the other hand, the one of the few known ways of extending lifespan in virtually all species is calorie restriction, and actually eating fewer calories. So the calorie restriction is reducing that energy load on your system, so your body is forced to kind of use its own like backup stores, like fat stores and other sources, so it's not overnourished. It maintains this homeostasis and balance, so you're never taking your body too far out of where it functions best at. And the calorie restriction also activates these many different longevity pathways that like repair DNA, they, you know, break down or recycle dysfunctional mitochondria, and prevent telomere shortening and reduce inflammation and oxidative stress. So yeah, calorie restriction, or not, like not becoming obese and not over consuming too many calories, is one of the kind of fundamentals to why a diet, or how a diet, could affect longevity. And what you mentioned, fasting, like well, you know, fasting itself mimics basically a lot of the same effects of calorie restriction. It turns on the same pathways as calorie restriction does, and you don't necessarily have to be eating at like a very low calorie diet. Because, you know, if you were to tell people that in order to live longer, they're going to have to eat like 20% fewer calories for the rest of their life, then most of them are going to be, yeah, it's not worth it for me. I'm not going to do it, because like, I just, you know, food is an important factor, or it's pretty important in just the society and culture. And yes, people enjoy food. It's entertainment as well as, you know, nourishment. You need it. And yeah, just telling people that you need to go on like a very starvation diet is not really appealing for most people. So that's why intermittent fasting can be like a great alternative for that, because, you know, arguably you will actually activate these pathways that relate to longevity even more profoundly and more powerfully, because you're in a fast state, and during a fast state your body doesn't have access to like extra calories, and therefore is forced to really dig deep into its own like self-repair and the self-recycling processes, which itself kind of clears out the junk that accumulates with aging, and repairs these dysfunctional cell particles, and just, you know, makes the body stronger against the aging process in general.
Yeah. So a shorter eating window is a way to not overeat.
Yeah, certainly. Like, you know, intermittent fasting can be a form of creating a calorie restriction. So you're automatically may begin to eat fewer calories because you're going to, if you eat only twice a day, for example, instead of three or five times, then you automatically will end up probably eating like a few hundred fewer calories just because of like, it's a hard to overeat in like one single meal.
Yeah.
So that's a form of calorie restriction, but there's also independent factors that promote longevity. So the one of last year, 2019 in December, there was this huge meta-analysis that concluded that intermittent fasting doesn't work, or intermittent fasting works not only because of the weight loss and calorie restriction, but it also works because of these activation of these defense systems, such as one of them being sirtuins and autophagy, and even like increase in NAD and these different anti-aging molecules that help the body to adapt to stress and reverse the aging process. So you can use intermittent fasting for like weight loss and improving your health, but it also works even if you don't lose weight. But you know, it would be better if it did. Like, it would be better if you did like achieve like a more optimal body composition with like slightly less fat mass and more muscle mass.
Yeah. Last week I had only one meal a day, and I'm 63 years old. And do you think that's a good thing, or should I like 50 plus? should we have two meals a day, or is it okay for us to have only one meal a day? What do you think?
Yeah, like it depends on your kind of results, and it depends on how your body responds. Okay. So generally, it is a trend that slightly older people above 50, they begin to naturally lose more muscle mass as a byproduct of aging, because the body becomes down regulates a lot of the growth hormones, as well as the frail state begins to set in. So that's why it may not be like that good of idea to fast for exponentially long when you are older. But at the same time, you can safely prevent that by, you know, still implementing some form of resistance training into your routines, and eating like a higher protein diet will also prevent the muscle loss that happens with aging. Okay. And yeah, like if you don't, you know, lose muscle by eating one meal a day, then it's not the problem. But optimally, you know, yeah, maybe two meals a day is still better, or like a more safer bet. And it would be like two meals would still help you to build more muscle or maintain it more easily than one meal, because you're stimulating the muscle protein synthesis more frequently. So you can't really. You're not going to achieve the same effect by eating only once a day when it comes to muscle growth, and you need to kind of spread it out a little bit. But two meals a day is already sufficient. You're going to be able to maintain, you can even build muscle with it. And there are some studies as well where like women are put onto one meal a day, and they don't lose muscle as long as they're eating enough calories and protein. So I would say that if you're eating enough protein and you're exercising, then you're not going to at least you're not going to lose muscle, and you can maintain it, but you probably won't be able to build it in that scenario. So two meals a day is also like a good option.
Oh, that's fine. How about 3 to 5 days fasting once or twice a year for us over 50?
Yeah, well, I think you probably don't need to go for like any longer than 48 hours. So if I were to be, you know, in my 60s, I wouldn't fast for like 3 days, because it's not going to be worth it. Like, there's always like, because it's inevitably going to lead to some muscle loss, and it's probably going to be pretty difficult to rebuild it. Although your body does bounce back from these longer fasts, I would say it's not going to be worth it. And you don't really need to go for these very long fasts either, if you're like already doing intermittent fasting on a daily basis. So, the longest I would go would be like maybe 24 hours and then eat like a very kind of a lower calorie intake on that one day. And that achieves almost like a similar effect. Like you can still eat a few hundred calories and for like within 48 hours and still maintain like a higher level of autophagy and these other longevity pathways. So you don't need to go on like a zero calorie fast to achieve a similar effect. So you can even eat, you know, the fasting mimicking diet where you are eating 500 calories for a few days in a row. And that has been shown to lead to similar like results in terms of anti-aging by down-regulating some of the, you know, IGF-1 hormone and activating autophagy and so on. So yeah, like as an older person, you don't really need to go like a very, you know, intense.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you suggest any specific diet regime?
Well, I think the main rule for a healthy diet is just whole foods, as you know, the majority of the foods should come from whole foods, kind of the foods that you find in nature, and you know, meats, vegetables, tubers, fruit, berries, fish, eggs, and the second point would be just know your how do you react to them. So if you have some autoimmune issues, like you're allergic to gluten or lectins or dairy or something else, then you should probably limit that food and kind of cycle some foods as well. So because avoiding certain foods all the time can cause it can cause some sensitivity towards that food. So if you're like eating like a zero gluten diet for years, then your body will develop some mild form of gluten intolerance. Mm-hmm. And the same applies to carbohydrates as well. Like I think cycling the carbohydrate intake is probably optimal for maintaining higher levels of insulin sensitivity and higher metabolic flexibility. So you will be, you know, the majority of the time, it's a good idea to maintain like at least some form of carbohydrate restriction, because you know, ketosis and low carb diets, they can also mimic some aspects of calorie restriction by keeping insulin and blood sugar low. So, you know, spiking your insulin and blood sugar very high throughout the entire day, like several times, that's one important factor that's going to accelerate aging as well. So you don't, and it's caused like, it's linked to like atherosclerosis and heart disease as well. So you shouldn't want to spike your insulin like from the moment you wake up until the moment you go to bed. So, you know, the intermittent fasting kind of bypasses that to a certain extent. So if you're eating only twice a day, then it doesn't matter that you spike your insulin. But yeah, in general, I personally think eating some form of like a low carb-ish diet and then cycling some carbs every once in a while is a good idea.
No, that's fine. So not keto all the time.
Yeah, like not all the time, but you can do it the majority of the time is good. Because you know, again, you're keeping your insulin low, you're keeping your fat burning high, and yeah, it's great. Yeah. So but yeah, like you probably wouldn't need to do it chronically either all the time.
And what do you say about supplements? Is there any supplements that you think everyone should take?
Well, depends on like your blood test as well. So the majority of population is deficient in vitamin D, especially in the Nordic countries.
Yeah.
And, you know, the best source for that is the sunlight. But if it's not possible, then taking a supplement is also good. Like, a few thousand IUs is really safe, and you know, even the upper limit of 10,000 IUs per day hasn't been found to have like any specific toxicity or anything like that. But yeah, like you don't need any more than a few thousand IUs. But yeah, it depends a lot on the vitamin D levels in the blood, because vitamin D is like a central hormone involved in basically all physiological processes.
Yeah.
And next up would be magnesium, because that's in like the majority of food is also deficient in magnesium, and the soil is deficient, so people don't get that much magnesium as they did in the past. Mm. So some magnesium supplement is great. Specifically, some anti-aging supplements that I personally take every sometimes are creatine, actually. And well, creatine is known as a like a sports supplement and a muscle building supplement, but creatine is also very important for cognition, preventing cognitive decline, and just general metabolic health and insulin sensitivity. So, and it's even like involved in methylation. So creatine is you know, well researched for decades, and it's been shown to improve everything, starting with like physical performance and strength, and ending with even like IQ. So if you like vegetarians or vegans start taking creatine, then their IQ tends to increase by a few points. Yeah. You know, in some studies, because creatine is mostly found in muscle meat and animal foods. Yeah. So that's why it's like an important energy production molecule. Like it helps the body to produce more energy. And one of the things that happens with aging is that your body loses its ability to produce energy. Mm-hmm. And this energy deficit just, it slows down everything. Like your body will just doesn't have the necessary resources to do like what it's supposed to do, like immune function and those sort of things.
Yeah. How about omega 6 and 3 balance between them?
Omegas are essential, both omega 6 and omega 3s, and the modern diet tends to be way too high in omega 6s, like 20 times more high than omega 3s, and for optimal health you would want to maintain more of like a balance. So the optimal ratios or the healthy ratios would be at least like maybe 2-1 or 4-1 at the maximum. Yeah. So basically, in order to achieve that, you have to avoid all these vegetable oils that are high in omega-6s, like canola oil, sunflower oil, soybean oil, corn oil, all those things. They're very inflammatory, and too high omega-6 in the body will just cause oxidative stress and inflammation, and that leads to like other diseases like diabetes and whatnot. So personally, I don't use any of these vegetable oils, and I also don't like I don't overheat, or I don't cook with like other fats that much either, that are relatively easy to oxidize. So if you use if you fry fish, the fish has omega-3s, which are healthy. But if you fry it in high heat, then those omega-3s will also become oxidized. And of course, it's the same inflammatory response. So it depends on like the preparation method as well. Not only just the, like what type of the fat are you eating, but also like how you use it and how you prepare it. So what I use for cooking are primarily actually like saturated fat, because that's more stable than polyunsaturated fats like fish and olive oil, so they won't become that easily oxidized. And to get like additional omega-3s, I don't really take like omega-3 supplement. I just get my omega-3s from just things like grass-fed meat, fatty fish, salmon, and so eggs have a little bit of them, and seafood in general is a higher omega-3s.
Yeah, that's fine. We have to move on. Your thoughts about anti-aging and movement and exercise?
Certainly. Like movement is like life. Like without movement, you would die. And the body thrives with regular exercise, and some form of like heavier exercise as well. So there's both resistance training as well as like lower aerobic training are good for longevity as well as just health. And I like to go for walks. I cycle my bike, and I also do resistance training, which is supposed to stimulate muscle growth. And that's also pretty important for slowing down aging, because muscle is one of the most biggest like metabolic organs.
Yeah.
And muscle mass also determines how well you metabolize carbohydrates, how insulin sensitive you are, and how much strength you have. So, you know, with the decline in muscle mass, you'll also become more frail, and you're easily injured. Like, you may break your hip more easily, you may catch an infection more easily, just because your body doesn't have like the robustness. So some form of resistance training is pretty important, and resistance training can be done with like either weights or even like your own body weight. It doesn't really matter. The body just needs this higher stimulus of physical exertion, and for that can be around, you know, pretty near your maximum, around 70-80% of your maximum. But there's also things like, or biohacks like blood flow restriction training, where you trick your body into thinking that it's lifting heavier weights than it actually is by modulating some of the blood flow in your limbs that are being exercised. So, for example, there's these bands, you place them around your arms or feet or legs, and then you exercise by doing like some bicep curls or push-ups, and you can achieve the same muscle growth effect with even like only 20-30% of the maximum. So you're kind of tricking your body into thinking that it has a heavier load than it actually is.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yes.
So you prefer both cardio and like strength training for elderly?
Yeah, certainly. Like both of them are good.
Yeah.
But I think like most people do too much cardio and not enough resistance training. Because resistance training is more hard, or it's more uncomfortable. Yeah. Whereas, you know, cycling a bike at an easy pace, you can do it for a longer time.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the muscle building is more important, I would say, because muscle building also has a cardiovascular effect. So you could improve your cardiovascular fitness, and some studies actually show that it is better for the heart health, because although it's more intense, it's not that long and it's more brief. So you don't really put that much stress on like the heart, so to say. You actually improve the heart's function.
Yeah. And in, as you said before, elderly people lose muscles. So that's why strength training are very important for elderly, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, and what do you think about?
Important.
Yeah. What do you think about heat interval training in for elderly people?
Like certainly they can do it, but they have to kind of be aware of their fitness. So, it's not necessary. Like, you don't need to do HIIT if you are doing some form of resistance training, because resistance training itself is a form of high intensity training. Like, you are reaching a same threshold in your heart rate as you would with HIIT.
Uh-huh.
So, no need. I personally do some HIIT maybe like once a week, I wouldn't do it like that often. I would much rather focus on the resistance training and just easier cardio.
Okay. I do also HIIT once a week, running fast, eight times in 20 seconds. So that's fine. And I'm 63. So, but I feel like it works for me. I love it, actually. Then over to sleep, anti-aging and sleep. Have you some thoughts about that?
Sleep kind of modulates a lot of these anti-aging pathways, like autophagy and even like muscle growth happens during sleep. Your body repairs itself during sleep, and sleep deprivation itself is linked to Alzheimer's and insulin resistance and weight gain and depression and those things. So like not getting enough sleep is definitely not optimal. And most people would, you know, although they might be sleeping for like 8 hours, which is the recommendation, they're still kind of missing out on some of the key stages of the sleep, or they're not getting enough of them. So the quality of the sleep is much more important than the quantity or the length.
Yeah.
And yeah, like the sometimes or like a lot of the times this sleeping problems stem from like being overweight or being too stressed out. So the kind of the chronic sped up life of modern life is causing some sleeping problems and keeping people awake because the body just is stuck in the stressed out state.
Yeah.
And as well as these general circadian disruption that is caused by, you know, light exposure, as well as, you know, staying up all night, different kinds of traveling and other forms of disruptors. So your body has, your body functions best when it's linked to the day and night cycles of the environment. So you would want to sleep as close to the sun movement as possible, yeah. So to say. Waking up slightly earlier and going to bed to slightly sooner, and kind of the trends or the fluctuations in your body's hormones as well are released, you know, around midnight,
yeah.
If everything is working properly. So, you know, optimally, we would want to be in bed before 11 p.m. at least, I think.
Okay. And do you have some tips for a better sleep?
Like, I think overall daily sunlight exposure is pretty important because this UV light from the sun is going to help the body to produce its sleep hormones at night, and it even like the kind of the amount of sunlight you get during the daytime is very linked to how well you sleep as well. So going outdoors more often and not staring at the computer screen is pretty good, and in the evening that's exactly what you would want to avoid. So looking at your smartphone and getting exposed to this bright blue light is immediately going to kind of suppress melatonin, the sleep hormone, and keeps people awake. So yeah, like a lot of times people just don't have, they're not going to be able to wind down enough to fall asleep. And it's one of the worst things to do is to, you know, stare at your phone in the bed. Yeah. And
Do you use blue light blocking glasses?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, you do.
And it's going to filter out the harmful blue wavelengths.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the red light is safe in a way. The red wavelengths don't affect melatonin that way. Uh-huh. They're not going to suppress it.
Okay. Are there any supplements that's good for the sleep?
Magnesium is a good supplement for relaxation and stress management and sleep in general. So I do take some magnesium in the evening. And another supplement that I like for sleep is a glycine, which is like an amino acid inhibitory that lowers blood sugar and makes you relaxed and lowers oxidative stress and just helps with sleep as well. So I take 3 grams of glycine in the evening as well. It's an amino acid and like powder. So it's it's also found in like protein foods, but you can also take it as a supplement, and it tastes really good, like some sweetness.
Yeah. And how much did you take?
Three grams.
Yeah.
And you can take it, you know, a few times a day as well.
Yeah,
like doses up to, I think doses up to 20 grams a day has been shown to be safe and no side effects.
Yeah, fine. And over to stress and our mind for anti-aging. Your thoughts about that?
Well, stress is like too much stress is definitely bad, but not enough stress can also be not optimal. So your body thrives under these mild as well as acute stressors. So we thrive under periods of, you know, some form of stress, but we also need enough recovery, and that can actually make our body stronger and more resilient against the stress in the future. You know, the way like exercise and weightlifting works, you are stressed out while you're exercising, but afterwards your body recovers and it actually becomes stronger. So the problem is that in the modern world, we have like this countless small stressors that keep us in this chronically stressed out state all the time and keep us in this very alert state. Like, you know, we read the news, we get freaked out, we're supposed to be at work, we get stuck in traffic, we lose our wallet, whatever it may be. We have relationship problems, we're sleeping problems, we eat crappy food. All those things that they make us, or it kind of overstimulates the stress, and that's just, you know, stress can cause damage to like your brain cells as well as telomeres, and just accelerates aging and quite rapidly. So that's why stress management itself is quite important, but simultaneously you also want to, you know, because the problem is that you can't really avoid stress. It's like part of life. It's actually life itself exists almost because of stress. You know, you're in this existential kind of turmoil between, you know, life and death, and you need stress in order to kind of stay alive. And that's why you can't really, you know, place yourself in this bubble wrap. You have to embrace the stress and know that it exists and just use it for becoming stronger as a person itself. And everything that we talked about here, like, you know, exercise and some fasting, eating some, you know, carbohydrate, cycling, and you know, saunas and cold showers, all they are positive stressors. Like, they're going to make the body stronger against the stress, and they also link to many like anti-aging and longevity pathways. So it's like a double win. Like the stronger your body, or the more easily your body is able to endure stress as well as adapt and recover from it, the easier it is for the body to live longer as well and stay healthy, because, you know, stress itself is not going to be damaging, because stress is like a subjective thing. You know, for me, not eating for like 3 days or 5 days is not a big stressor. Like, I don't freak out because of it. And like, exercising for me isn't a stressor either. But, you know, for someone who is eating the standard American diet, they're eating 6 times a day, and they're obese, they're metabolically dysfunctional, then for them that's like a catastrophe. It's even like skipping a meal or not getting their preferred meal, or they're not getting their favorite meal, can be like really problematic and very stressful. So it's like a very subjective thing. So like, you kind of have to achieve this state of mind and state of body where your stress is not affecting you in like a negative way.
What method for relaxing do you prefer for yourself?
I find a lot of relaxation even in, you know, walking in nature, just spending time to listening to some podcast or audiobook, and taking a nap during the daytime. Sometimes, like, if I feel that I got a short night's sleep, then I'll take a nap. And also, like, sauna, mild sauna is great for that. And not thinking about work, or just getting my mind out of this overthinking or something like that.
Yeah. Do you some kind of mindfulness or yoga or something?
I do like calisthenics and that sort of thing. So that can be considered like a mindful practice, because, you know, you require to maintain balance and be very mindful about your body. The other mindfulness practices like meditation I used to do in the past, but I haven't done them recently. So I find that I meditate when I'm like writing, and when I am in exercise mode or something else. So I can meditate with other means. So it doesn't have to be a meditation where you sit down. You can meditate in different ways.
Yeah. But the important thing is time for relaxing.
Downtime.
Yeah. You mentioned cold and heat exposure. I love it both. Do you prefer them in combination, or is it okay with only heat also?
Yeah, but you can. I think if you combine them together, then you would achieve a better effect. But you can do them separately as well. So there's no rules.
No. Okay. I think I saw on social media the other day that you are writing a new book with the name Stronger by Stress. Is that right?
Yeah.
Tell us short about it.
It's basically about the same thing that I just mentioned, that
stress
is a part of life, and you have to kind of, in order to stay healthy and be a like higher performing person, a more successful person, then you also have to know how to manage stress and how do you particularly adapt to the stress. So how do you use the positive side of stress to become stronger and more resilient? And it covers many different strategies that we already mentioned, like the sauna, exercise, fasting, heat, but it gives you like a more of a applicable guidelines and what the science says about these things.
Sounds very interesting. do you have a date for it? When release?
I think it's going to be in August or some around there.
Yeah, very interesting. Is there something you want to add before we finish?
No, not really. Like, I think these are kind of the practices, or these biohacks are basically the foundation to just living healthier, or at least they're going to increase the health span. Even if they may not increase your lifespan, they're definitely going to increase the health span, so to say. So you'll be just functional for longer, and I think that's even like a better option in many cases.
Instructions for healthy aging.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I used to finish the interviews with your three best life tips, or your three best life hacks. Have you something to share with us?
I would say first would be get a sweat on every day, whether that be sweat through either exercise or like a sauna, because that helps to improve cardiovascular health and eliminates a lot of the toxins that we get exposed to. Second would be to have a like a routine for doing undisturbed work. So you would want to do something every day where you're focused on like this some sort of important work task that is important for your goals and kind of your vocation, whatever it may be, where you're like not distracted by social media or some other things. So like, unfortunately, we are in a highly distractive world, and in order to become distracted, to prevent becoming distracted or lose our focus, then we just have to create these specific blocks of time every day where we are focused and doing like our work. And lastly, I would say is maybe I would say
you have already said so much, so that's not the problem. I have one thing about the routine, and I myself wrote a book 1 year ago, and then I read something you write about deep work, and then you take a walk around 12 o'clock. So I wrote my book in a month, much because I your advice, actually. That's a fine thing.
That's cool.
Where can the listeners find more about you on the net?
My website is seemlund.com, and all my social media handles are also seemlund.
Yeah, I can link to someone, so something. Nice. And thank you again for letting me doing this interview with you. And I I always read your blog and I sometimes listen to your podcasts. They are very interesting. So keep up the good work and take care. And thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the podcast Feel Good and Have Fun with your host, Benny Addison. Now head over to Benny's blog at bennyaddison.com and tell him what you think. Thank you, welcome back, and have fun.